Welcome to a fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Villegas. Joining me today, my good friend out of Laredo, Texas, Mr. Mario Martinez.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
Doing good. How's it going to you, good sir?
Oh, busy in the middle of a semester. What do you expect?
All right, because I know you're a teacher, and my mission is to completely and utterly derail your career as a teacher. I'm kidding. It's not really my mission, but
it's not going to be that hard.
No. What's okay? And I always ask you this off the record, and I don't know if I've ever asked you this on the record, but I've got to ask now. What is the craziest thing a student's tried to pull this year?
Oh, pull this year?
Yes.
Honestly, not a whole lot, man. Because one of the things that I'm doing this semester in particular is I'm teaching high school students that are signed up for college credit classes. So it's like the kids, the way I always describe them, they've got Ivy Leagues in their sights and stuff like that. And since they're in high school, they're still kind of governed by that age superiority. Like if you're a year older, you're more important for some reason.
Right.
So yeah, make that a good 10 years in my case. And oh yeah, they're all kind of terrified.
Or at least I guess if you're dealing with those kids, you're dealing with the kids that are already trying to get into collegiate courses and trying to, get ahead of time.
It's the college ones. They get a little ballsier as far as just, wow, really? Okay.
Have you bumped heads with any of the other because I imagine this is what I imagine it in my mind as to what your class is. It's only because I know you very well and all the topics we talk about and all the things we have. I imagine that there are times where you will bump heads with the other faculty members, not because you want to, but because you will start teaching something that they may not like or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining.
I think that, you imagine it worse than it is. I can't say that I've ever really bumped heads with any of my colleagues or anybody I've ever had to really work with
I am waiting for that day where you're like, you know what? We're going to all read Catcher in the Rye, and then somebody says, no, that is banned from our school.
I was just rambling on about that book the other day in one of my classes. Because, it's on the banned book list, and I had to beg the question for the few students that read it. I think out of the 100 or so that I'm teaching this semester, I don't know, maybe like 5 read it. Maybe 5 have read it. And I asked them, point blank, what's so bad about it? And none of them could come up with an answer save that weird thing with the prostitute, her pimp steals like 10 bucks from Holden Caulfield. And or that part where he's spending the night at his teacher's place and his teacher is like kind of drunk or something like that. And he wakes up and, he's there on the couch staring at him or something like that. That was it.
It's funny that you bring up we bring this up. Have you seen the documentary Salinger yet?
I have not. I've got the hardbound book somewhere behind me.
Oh, yeah. I forgot they put a book out for that, too. It was for those who have no idea, the Weinstein Company recently put out a documentary on Salinger, and it's sort of a weird – it's a very weirdly paced doc. It's actually not the best doc.
Oh, you've seen it?
Well, it's on Netflix right now.
Really?
And it's – like I'm watching it and enjoying it because I enjoy Salinger as a character. But I guess like I have outgrown that period of me being fascinated with J.D. Salinger as a writer.
It's one of those things where, like, when I first read the book, and we were talking about this the other day, when I first read that book, it like sang to me. It was, it was a disillusioned teenager, reading a guy that was in essence a disillusioned teenager, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I read it later on, I think I was 22 at the time, and I found myself like scoffing constantly. Like rolling my eyes all the time and like in the margins instead of putting, anything of any sort of scholarly value was stuff like quit whining,
Stop whining.
Yeah, because it got to a point where, like, I guess when you're a teenager and you're reading that, you know, it says a lot to you because everyone in the world's a phony. Everybody, you know, you see you're trying to come into yourself and you think that, you know, the world isn't going to do anything for you. And then you get older, you get more knowledge, and then you go back to it and you're kind of like, again, it's just a whiny kid wandering around town for a couple of days, you know?
It is weird going back to that book. Like, that's why watching the doc on Salinger, it's funny, because if you had asked me in high school, hey, there's a doc on Salinger, I would have watched it right away. And I don't know if it's because the Weinstein pacing of the doc, or if it's how it's shot, or how it's the stories told. Because obviously, for those who have no idea, J.D. Salinger wasn't one to go out to the press. And he was not necessarily a recluse, but he sure as hell kept to himself, very much so, throughout his life. Like, apparently his only like real life goal was, I want to get published in the New Yorker. And like, once he did that, that was pretty much all he really did. Like, the only book he's ever really published was Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, there's Frankie and Zoe.
Oh, that right? too. That's right. There's like a couple, but it's such a, I mean, he's got a lot of short stories that got published, but.
Yeah, one thing that I was hearing just on, I think it was the preview for that documentary, was that, you know, that even though he had stopped publishing, he had never stopped writing, which is, I mean, it's kind of an exciting thing to think. You know what I mean? It's like when they found all those old Franz Kafkas that no one had ever seen before. You know, I'm kind of looking forward to when that comes out.
See, but I'm wondering this. This is what always bugs me about, especially in knowing the time we live in now. I mean, the time we live in now, it is so much easier to put your shit out there. It is much easier to put your stuff out there. And every time I hear, like, oh, he kept writing. Oh, why didn't he put online? Why didn't he, you know? And it wasn't like, granted, I think, you know, J.D. Salinger died. I think we had the internet by the time he died. I'd like to say we had the internet as we know it now, maybe even a little bit less. But, I mean, regardless of that, whenever I hear, I guess I'm not as impressed as that. I mean, because it's cool that he wrote. I'm glad he did. But, you know, why didn't he just, you know, put it out there knowing these people read it?
I mean, not to say, oh, yeah, any renowned, like, Salinger. But, like, I get it. As a writer, I get it. You know, there's a thing about if you get a lot of people that are just really, like, charged about one thing that you've done. Like, I used to read that Anthony Burgess, the guy that did Clockwork Orange, like, he went to his grave hating that book because he wrote, like, I don't know if you know anything about that guy, but he wrote, I mean, over 30 books, and I mean, historic fiction on you know, people like Marlowe and Shakespeare. He wrote these real great, you know, spy novels. He wrote all this real crazy shit, you know. And no matter what he did, he said he would keep getting calls from grad students that wanted to know about A Clockwork Orange. And he admittedly had done that book in, like, I think 4 months or something. It was something that he didn't think was all that serious. And that's what he was known for, you know. So it's kind of like, get out of the limelight. Don't have to worry about coming up with the second Catcher in the Rye. You know, just kind of do whatever you want to do.
So I'm right now checking the wiki page on it. J.D. Salinger did in fact die in 2010. So he had at least a good 8 years of the internet existing. And it's not that and I get what people are saying. It's like, yeah, he got the wrote and not published. It's just such a, it's just this foreign concept to me where, especially in the era I grew up in and sort of the era that I exist in, that I'm like, why don't you just pop it online? I mean, no one would read it.
You got to think that, you know, how old was Salinger when we were really getting this, you know, kind of explosion of being able to expose yourself online? I know that sounded horrible, but you know what I'm talking about.
My grandmother's is around maybe a little bit younger than Salinger, but she's online and emailing all the damn time.
I think it just takes takes a different kind of person, because I got a 90-year-old grandmother that flat out, the only reason she got a computer was to play Scrabble on it. An email address. Her first email was, don't send me emails anymore. That was the only email she's ever written.
Can you imagine J.D. Salinger on forums? Like, and only the idea of the recluse, like J.D. Salinger. Like, imagine, like, what do you think he would have done if during his, you know, during his prime of writing, that he had the option to go on Twitter? And like, I put it this way, like, because I mean, we're in a weird hyper communication time. I mean, beforehand, we're talking about, since I kind of administer Mario's Facebook page a bit and kind of help him out with that, we're talking about how a student had posted a message to one of your Facebook messages to kind of get a hold of you. And I was thinking, like, what if, you know, if Jaden Salinger was around now, let's say that now and he wrote Catcher in the Rye. I mean, Catcher in the Rye is the kind of book that it could be written about any era at any point in time, because that's the beauty of the novel, because it's, you know, it's just a teen being a teen. So, like, what if that was published now in the time that we live in now in terms of hyper communication? I mean, do you think Salinger would still have been that J.D. Salinger would still never be, you know, go to the press, never, you know, do all the things he did now in terms of being reclusive? Do you think he'd still not talk to anybody online at that point, or like completely?
Man, I gotta think, if you read any part of Catcher in the Rye as being autobiographical, if he, you know, through Holden Caulfield, if he's being at all honest about how he kind of looks at the world, I gotta think that he would be kind of disgusted. I mean,
he would be disgusted, but like everybody online is disgusted.
I mean, no, it's one of those things where I find myself like, I'll get lost in the filth of, you know, just shit you read on like message boards. Like, and it's infuriatingly ignorant, like nonsensical bullshit. But like, it's like a fucking, it's like a whirlpool, man. Like, it just, you cannot help but get sucked into that crap. And then you look at stuff like Twitter. Good God, man. You know, one of the conversations I have with students is about how this generation is real. It's real egocentric, you know, and I mean, shit, I'm a guy that puts my own shit online because I think people give a shit, you know, and it's one of those things.
Yeah,
where
kids,
like,
don't be so egocentric. Now, yeah. My book, on the other hand, that is gold. Never has a writer such as this. Thompson, J.D. Salinger, Bukowski, Martinez.
Oh, I will tell you one thing, though. Those kids eat up Bukowski. They love that stuff, man. Like, I mean, I guess they've never read anything like it before. They keep on getting Edgar Allan Poe, like, for 10 years.
Well, because, I mean, Edgar Allan Poe is – Edgar Allan Poe now is safe unless you start talking about his real life. Like, you can give up – you can put out The Raven – and maybe The Cask of Amontillado, but you'll never, ever, ever, talk about the, like, who, like, what's the story with him and the killer gorilla? I always forget what the fucking story is called, but that one.
Oh, the first detective story?
Like, nobody ever talks about that one. No one ever puts that in, like, the curriculum.
You want to know why? I'll tell you, and I get this example because I teach. The Telltale Heart, the go-to, like, fucking Poe story for, you know, anything. That's, if you print it out on a, you know, just a sheet of paper, it's like, I don't know, maybe a page and a half, maybe 2 pages, maybe. That detective story, you do the same thing, it's going to reach, I don't know, 25, 30 pages, maybe, something like that. I had kids complaining about Flannery O'Connor. I gave him Good Country People, which, listeners, if you've never read that story, find that story, read it. It's hilarious. But yeah, the first thing I asked them, you know, what they think, just their opinion, enjoy, didn't enjoy, you know, it was really long. The thing was like 19 pages.
That's not that long.
No, but I get it. You know, I, in college, English major and all that stuff, English professor. I mean, I get that. But like 19 pages, really? I got to think that if a kid tallied up how much crap they were reading on Twitter and Facebook and every other nonsensical site they're going to, you know, any given day.
See, maybe that's a trick.
You got to give it to them.
Maybe that's what you got to start doing now is giving out the reading assignments in 140 character chunks. And then maybe that's just if you give it to them in that many chunks of things. Like a tweet a day, maybe. Maybe that's what we need to do, is just somehow condense these things to a tweet a day.
I've got too much respect to tweet to condense Good Country People to a tweet.
I don't know. That might be way more interesting. I would love to actually see that. That would actually be kind of cool to see. Because I mean, imagine this. Imagine if you were forced as a writer to condense a paragraph of yours down and still have it have meaning, like not using the letters as numbers, that kind of bullshit.
Well, God, have you ever heard of the Hemingway Challenge?
No, what's that?
is to write a story in 6 words.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently the origin of this whole thing was he was at a bar, go figure.
Of course.
And some guy came up
to him. Where else would Hemingway be? He'd either be in Cuba smoking with Castro or at a bar in like
the middle of the ocean shooting at sharks.
Pretty much.
No, but this guy comes up to him and slaps $10 on the bar, says, "I bet you can't write a story in 6 words." And Hemingway, what the hell was it? It was child's shoes for sale, worn once. That was the story. And fucking, if you asked him, he would have said that was the best thing he ever wrote.
That might be an interesting contest. I mean, because only because we're in a, I know a lot of people will slam Twitter and things like that, but I think we're in a interesting time of content. And yes, because we're now in a time where there is a service that says you only get 6 seconds to make a video. Good luck.
Okay, and that just shows how disconnected I am from that whole thing. Like, I don't know what I was looking at where they made a reference to a Vine video, and my first words were, "What the hell is that?" You know? And then I looked it up, and oh, Vine, you make 6 second videos. I thought, you got to be kidding me, really? But then again, if it makes no sense to me, I'm sure it does really well with smartphone users, internet users, and things like that.
Well, I think a good example of, if you want to see the power of Vine, that sounds kind of weird because you're like, how can you do anything in 6 seconds? Check out, I think it's Will Sasso. He's kind of a comedian that's done some funny things over Vine.
He used to be on Mad TV.
Exactly. Check what he's done in his Vines, and you can kind of see what can be done in 6 seconds, and it's actually kind of amazing being able to tell a full story in 6 seconds.
I was looking at something the other day that kind of proves that point, but it was it was titled something like, you know, 5 badass science fiction videos on YouTube that are under 5 minutes long, and there was one on there that I forget the title of it, but man, it really showed how you do not, if you think something out, if you really do something well, you do not need, you know, clunky exposition to just kind of, you know, describe these science fiction worlds. I mean, they described, I don't know how much, or conveyed, I don't know how much information in 3-4 seconds of a pan shot, you know.
I'm saying is that, like, in this world, I mean, even now, I mean, we're in like an era where anybody can put whatever they want online, and the barrier to entry is so goddamn low.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was reading something the other day about someone that they wrote erotic novels about women and dinosaurs.
Okay.
And not only that's what they do is for a living, but I mean, apparently this person has come out with dozens of these little novellas where that's the whole story. And you can buy that on Amazon. I mean, that's ridiculous.
So when can we expect the dinosaur erotica novel from you, Mario? When are you gonna get hop on these on all these? Because there's so many bandwagons you could hop on just because. Like, there's a part of me that wants to see you write that like shitty trashy romance novel. Like, there's such a part of me that wants to see that from you, just for no other reason than to see you write it.
Oh my God! You know, have you ever, like, thumbed through one of those things?
I happen to have one. Did I tell you the whole thing of the Diamond Club? Did I tell you about that?
I have not heard of this Diamond Club, but it's the reason why you have a trashy romance novel somewhere in your house.
It is the reason I have a trashy romance. For those, okay. So I'm going to tell you a fun story that involves a whole bunch of weird things. You remember that book, 50 Shades of Grey, right?
You know, again, how disconnected I am. I kept hearing one of the things I do in my classes, which I know annoys all of my students, is one of the questions I ask them is, do they have a favorite book or a favorite movie or, you know, band or something like that? And someone said the 50 Shades of Grey, and I keep thinking when I ask this question, I mean favorite, not the last one.
Did you say male or female that said that?
Oh, it was female.
Okay.
And one of the things that happened was, you know, I kept hearing about this book and that everybody, oh man, they're reading this book. And I asked, you know, what's this book about? And that kid clammed up, like, flat out told me, I don't want to say. I said, what do you mean you don't want to say? I'm a guy that studied literature. You know what I mean? Like, there's someone out there in the literary field that does work purely on the Marquis de Sade. I'm thinking, you know, how bad can this be? And then someone told me later on, no, it's like, it's a trashy romance novel, but with like S&M.
Yep.
And I got to think, wow, that's the new big thing.
Yeah, apparently Fifty Shades Jesus of Grey began as a fanfic, Twilight fanfiction, and then became a novel somehow. I don't even know the whole story behind it. Like, I don't even know.
Man, I wish you could see my face just when you said those words in that sequence, man. I just, like, are you kidding me?
That's all I remember is that it began as a fan fiction for Twilight. And then I guess it was good enough that someone said, you know, we can make this into a book. And then that's kind of where it spun off. That's
there
all I remember, to be honest.
Out there right now that are going to not finish the next American masterpiece. And that's the crap that gets published.
All right, I'm going to read let's see.
Are you going to read excerpts of this?
No, I don't have excerpts. So here it is. The 50 Shades trilogy. Trilogy, mind you.
Yeah, because, you know, tawdry sex, you need three whole books to talk about it.
The 50 Shades trilogy was developed from a Twilight fan fiction series originally titled Master of the Universe and published episodically on fan fiction websites under the
pen. It had the same title as He-Man?
Yes. But apparently they're making a He-Man movie, by the way. Just I'll let you know that.
Don't even get me started on the fact
that I'm ready for a He-Man movie.
I just saw they're remaking Carrie.
Yep.
You gotta be. No, well, I've told you that me and my fiance, we love October, and we're watching nothing but horror flicks, you know, all month. And we just finished watching Carrie, like, yesterday. Why in God's name would you try to redo something that she already did pretty good, you know?
All right. Here's a question I gotta ask. Is October, and you did mention you're gonna watch horror films. And it's only because I know what films you own. Are you gonna watch the entire. And I mean the entire collection of your Hellraiser films.
No.
You got to be kidding me. You got to do this.
Oh,
you
good
own
God.
Every goddamn Hellraiser film. Don't act like you don't.
I'll tell you. Oh, no. You know what? I actually don't.
The
last
missing?
One that came out, that one that was like an over-the-shoulder. Did you see that one?
I thought you had everything, including Hellworld or Hellraiser.
There is
Online.
One after Hellworld. They almost company apparently almost lost the rights, so they said let's fart out one more.
They did that for Hellraiser.
Oh yeah, no, they farted out one more, and it was like one of those half camcorder, half like.
There's a found footage Hellraiser film.
Oh, yeah, it involves a trip to Mexico and some weird incestuous stuff that goes on afterwards.
I think I found your birthday gift.
Oh, you'll hear the, thank you. Like,
no, apparently, the only reason I even bring it up is because, did you hear they made a new Chucky film?
God, with the legacy of Chucky, the something of Chucky. Yeah, I mean,
whatever apparently this one is a direct to DVD or direct to Blu-ray, or whatever you buy it. But apparently it's actually back to a more serious film, which I don't really know. I mean, I always liked that Chucky went in this weird kind of, fashion. I mean, how?
But if you're talking like the Bride of Chucky and the Seed of Chucky,
no,
and
I'm
stuff,
not talking
like
that shit.
Like
I'm
the
talking
first. Yeah, the first two, I mean, were even the third one, they were kind of taking themselves serious as a horror movie. You know, they were really trying to like freak you out with that stuff, even though you watch enough Chucky films and you got to think, well, how much does Chucky even weigh? Like, it's got to be in the ounces category, you know? Could he really choke somebody out with a plastic bag?
Not even. Not even. I mean, the only thing I remember that scared the crap out of me in a Chucky film, beyond the concept of the doll coming to life, which, by the way, that has got to be like the worst voodoo spell to ever cast. Like, if I was a murderer, and like, yes,
no,
I understand.
Really.
I understand. I'm trying to cast a spell to get into the young. Like, why the fuck would I put myself in a doll? Like, and I remember there was at one point, I think it was in 3 or something, that he starts bleeding, and like he was almost going to become mortal in the doll or some shit like that.
That actually starts happening like in the second one and the third one. The third one's hilarious because it takes place on that army base.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, fantastic. Like, you just got to love how they have so much ammunition on like a bunch of what in essence is a military high school.
Yeah. I always love the fact that he put live rounds in one of the guns, and that was the horror scene.
Oh yeah, I like that. What was it? The nerdy guy that is getting picked on like mercilessly the whole time. He's the one that throws himself on the grenade like to save everybody. Like that, I call BS on that
of
one.
Of course, yeah, no. But anyways, going back to the 50 Shakers, so we continue. So Master Universe released under the pen name Snow Queen's Ice Dragon. The piece featured characters named after Stephanie Meyer's characters in Twilight, Edward Cullen, and Bella Swan. After comments concerning the sexual nature of the material, James removed the story from the fanfiction website and published it on her own website, 50shades.com. She later rewrote Master of the Universe as an original piece, with the principal characters renamed Christian Grey and Anastasia Steele, and removed it from her website prior to publication. Meyer commented on the series saying that, "That's really not my genre, not my thing. Good on her. She's doing well. That's great."
Now, you know, hey, if you're an author and you got your piece, rock and roll. But good God, it's three books. It's three books about S&M.
Yeah,
you know, I can only imagine.
There's a controversy. But one of the controversies is depiction of BDSM. 50 Shades of Grey has also attracted criticism due to its depictions of BDSM, with Katie Raffi of Newsweek asking, "But why, for women especially, would free will be a burden? It may be that power is not always that comfortable." Anyways, fuck, who cares? It's getting made a movie, by the way.
In essence, you were trying to take something philosophical out of a book that's supposed to give you boners. Like, I'm sorry, that's what you're...
They're actually making a movie out of this, too, by the way.
Again, I wish you could see my face and how unsurprised it is.
Let's see, let's see what studio is being. Universal Pictures, one of the fucking parent companies. Looks like Focus Features in it. It's starring people, and it's coming out October 1st. It's slated to come out October 1st, 2014. So it'll be a hit.
One thing
of
that I did read, though, that was very amusing about the 50 Shades of Grey is that now embarrassing calls and, like, you know, trips to the ER are more frequent. Because I guess people are buying like sex swings and, you know, the whole nine yards and all that bondage nonsense, but they don't really know how to work it, so they get kind of injured. And then, well, shit, you got to call the fire department in there.
I love the idea. I think a sex swing may be my favorite adult thing.
That's one of those things where, I mean, I swear Bukowski mentioned it at some point, like, how boring does your sex have to be if that's the kind of crap that you need?
Well, no, what I love about a sex swing is that it requires a commitment of some sort. Like, I mean,
you gotta put that shit somewhere. You gotta, like, pick out a place in your home.
That's what I'm saying. You have to latch install that.
You gotta pick a sturdy beam. You gotta
like, you gotta go and install it. You gotta set it up. You gotta kind of, you know, make sure it can support the weight of the people on. Like, you have to install the damn thing in your house. Like, it's not like a vibrator you can kind of toss around, or a fleshlight that you can hide, or any other of the multitude of adult toys.
But it's one of those things, like, what happens when company comes over, it's in the living room, you take it off and you put like a chandelier there and they're wondering.
Dude, I would love if I went into a house and it's like, what is this? Oh, that's a sex swing. Okay, rock and roll. So anyway,
I thought you were going to say, like, the obvious, like, the chandelier is plugged into nothing, like, it's not even lit.
It's,
like,
even...
the joint to the ceiling is obviously off because it's covered in, like, a glossy black leather.
Dude, okay, here's the question. If you had to own a sex thing, and then now this sexual object, you'll own it. You know, it'll be yours, and, you know, you can use it or not use it, but you had to keep it out in complete, you know, in plain sight. Anybody could see it no matter what. What object would that be?
You ever seen A Clockwork Orange? Just talking about it earlier.
You'd have the giant penis?
And just uncomfortably slap it down so that it does that weird rocking motion, like...
I think I would actually have, just because it would, I don't even know, I would love to see what the facial reactions would be. I think I'd get like a fleshlight just to have it there and people are like, what the, why do you have
like
one of those?
Purposefully, you know, like, turn the lights off so you have
it. Like, it won't be used, it'll be completely clean and hypologically, it'll just be like Like, he'll have, you know, like, coffee books and, like, plants. Like, he'll just be there in the middle of the coffee table with a flashlight. Like,
it'll be next to, like, you know, a big hardbound of, like, you know, Van Gogh.
Exactly. Exactly. It's literally in the library of stuff. It'll be right next to all of the movies and everything else. Like, you'll see right next to it, you know, The Matrix and, you know, a copy of Milton and everything else. And then just a flashlight. And you have to go... And say,
you have just told me that your shelves are in complete disarray, sir. You got The Matrix next to Milton.
I do have The Matrix next to Milton, thanks to the fucking script book you lent me years ago and never really claimed back.
Oh, that's where that thing is.
Yeah, see?
I was like, you know, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now, and I'm like, I know I own two screenplays because I took a class on that.
Yep.
And there's one. Don't know what happened to that other one.
Yeah, the other one's here in Austin, Texas. So, ha, I can have The Matrix next to Milton. Now, that doesn't explain my copy of The Goonies next to it, but that's neither here nor there.
God, speaking of Goonies, man, I saw... Lost Boys the other day, part of the horror movie nonsense.
What are you chaining through the month of October then?
Oh man, it's just, you know, kind of whatever comes to mind, whatever, you know, just kind of, you know, try to get it off the top of our heads. It always culminates in The Shining. Right. Always watch that one on Halloween. But we've caught a bunch of, it doesn't necessarily have to be a straight horror film. You know, like we caught Dead Alive, and I don't know if you've ever seen that one, that old Peter Jackson movie.
I've not seen it, but I know of it.
It's a complete, you know, campy, you know, gore fest. It's a gross out flick.
Right.
You know, that's one of those, that's its pure purpose, and it's awesome. Like, it's hilarious. It's not trying to be... It's not trying to be anything but its weird little self. Like, there's a priest that goes into straight karate mode, kicking the crap out of zombies, and yells out that he, what was it, like, I kick ass for the Lord.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah, I've always heard that Dead Alive was good because Peter Jackson did it. I always heard it was campy fun.
You know, I wouldn't even say it's because Peter Jackson did it. It's just one of those, like, it's kind of like a Return of the Living Dead, which is on the list. Haven't watched it yet, but, you know, it's like one of those where, yeah, it's a horror flick, but they're really kind of celebrating the ridiculousness of all of that stuff.
Let me see. What is on the list so far? Do you have that in front of you at all?
Oh, no, that's somewhere else. But, you know, like The Shining's on there, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, okay. Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, kick the whole thing off with the original Halloween.
Okay.
God, we just saw The Orphanage today, which was by far a more depressing movie than it is a horror flick.
Are you going to put any kind of silly horror films on, like
Return of the Living Dead's in there. One of my fiance's picks was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Nice. About to say, you better put some.
No,
some
I was we had a good laugh at that because it's like there's a curse to that movie. Like, if you starred in that movie, your shit went nowhere. Like, no one remembered your name come 2000. But if you were like a co-star, if you were just kind of like, you had three lines in that movie, you went places.
Or if you actually were the guy behind it, because, you know, I mean,
why, who's the guy that did that movie?
Well, I don't know. Let's see who is attached to Buffy.
Because I know that two of the no-namers that were in there, and they were no-namers at the time, was like Steven Root, who you know, from Office Space, he was the voice of Bill Dotrieve in King of the Hill. He's that guy's come out.
Yeah, I'm gonna read a name. And it's who wrote it. And, you know, he's a little guy. He's not that big. You know, he just, you know, made one of the best selling films of the summer. You know, a little guy by the name of Joss Whedon wrote it.
He wrote the original one with the.
Yep.
You gotta be really.
Yep. Josh, that's why he got the TV show. Yeah, no, that's why he fucking knows.
I had assumed that someone had just kind of written that as like a throwaway thing, and like they just kind of gave it to somebody.
Nope. Joss wrote it, and that is probably the only name that might be the few name from the non television series. The TV series, you know, it's fine. From the non TV series, that might be the biggest name that came out of it. Of course, for those who have no idea who Joss Whedon is, I really don't want to have to explain who Joss Whedon is.
And I'd say Hilary Swank, man. That's probably the biggest
point, yeah.
That movie. I mean, seriously, it was one of those things like when I was watching that again, I was looking at all those bit parts and I was like imagining their thoughts being like, I'm going to get an Oscar one day and no one's going to remember your name, Buffy.
Pretty much. I'm going to make a movie that's worth $4 billion. Not $4 billion. I forgot how much fucking Avengers made. I'm going to say add to the list just because it's such a ridiculously silly movie, Idle Hands.
Oh, Idle Hands. I mean, that's a classy one. Like, again, one of those things where it's like, yeah, we can use the horror genre, but we can make it, you know, a funny thing with just a bunch of stoners having to deal with this stuff. Like, the roommates, you know, Seth Green, and yep. I could not tell you the other guy's name to save my life.
Let's see, we have, I'll tell you the cast. We have Seth Green. Do you remember the other guy? I don't even remember the character's names in the film. That's such a...
God, the main actor was his name's like Devin Sawa.
Yeah, it is Devin Sawa. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, God, a real under the radar. Like again, it's just kind of a campy flick. You know, it's just more amusing than horrifying or anything like that. And I don't know. That's kind of the fun of Halloween. God, we caught Gremlins 2 the other day, and if you haven't watched that in years, holy shit!
See, I consider. Wait, okay, Gremlins 1 was a Christmas film by mere technicality.
Well, technically, like, Gremlins 2 was, one, you know, a Christmas flick also. Like,
okay, so really both during Christmas. Okay, that's how I can remember they're both during Christmas or not.
Yeah, and that always kind of weird, like, really, they try to go with, like, a horror movie for Christmas, but then again, they had, what, the Black Christmas a couple of years ago?
Yeah, about to say
and
Black Christmas.
And they had, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night, which if you've never seen those, holy shit, awful. Awful.
But like awful in a good way or awful in a bad way?
The only saving grace in these are the kind of flicks that if you're watching them by yourself, don't waste your time. If you've got a group of friends that really enjoys like a good shitty movie, you know, that's the one of the movies to go to. Like there's one good scene where he impales somebody on reindeer antlers and the effects that they were doing were pretty good. Like, that's the only compliment I could really have in that film, because it was god-awful. Like, yeah, it was just terrible.
Yeah, I've always heard that those films... But okay, so you've had... so it sounds like a lot more serious films, and every so often it kind of comedy...
Oh, yeah, God, one real serious one was Cape Fear.
Oh, Jesus,
the one
wow.
from the 90s, not the one from the 60s, which I really do want to see, because I want to see how the hell they do some of that stuff, you know, back in the 60s.
Right.
Max Cady can't flat out say, you know, have you ever been a woman counselor in 1962? Like, that just can't happen. So I'm really wondering what, you know, how they did that in the 60s. But, man, the one in the 90s with the Nolte and De Niro.
Yep.
Man, that was an amazing movie.
That's always heard. I've yet to see it. I'll
put it to you this way, man. I've seen that movie, I want to say, maybe like 5 or 6 times in my life. I know what happens. You know, there's nothing in there that's particularly surprising. You know, you remember the plot and stuff.
See,
that movie still makes me tense when I watch it. You know, it's just one of those like, man, it was really well. It was like one of Scorsese's best, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. I've always heard that. Like, I mean, you know, it's that. If you were to rank Scorsese, I mean, God, it's hard to say. Like, I'm glad you said one of his best, because it would be hard for me to say what I think his best is.
It depends on what you're going for.
Because yeah, no, it really does.
Really, the mafia movies, you're going to have people that are going to say something like Casino. Me, personally, it's Goodfellas, you know, but then you're going to have... It's amusing to see that most of his real good films, De Niro is, you know, the main guy in that. I mean, if it wasn't for Scorsese, De Niro wouldn't be anybody.
There are a couple of films that De Niro's been in.
Think about Taxi Driver. Think about Raging
Bull. Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's one of those things where, like, if you want to see the quintessential Scorsese, you know, see a bunch of films that he did, they're going to have De Niro in them.
I want to
see some great films that De Niro's been in that shows, like, man, he's an actor. They're going to be a bunch that Scorsese did.
I will give you that. It's funny that you mentioned Halloween and, like, you're going through movies. I've been getting the itch to play Silent Hill 2 again. And I've got to find a copy of it on PS2 to play it, though. Because apparently, did you hear about the HD remix that they had for Silent Hill 2 and 3?
Oh, man, if Shit, if I had to look up what Vine was, man, I am completely...
it's okay. Don't buy them on the HD version for the PS3. They screwed over a lot of things. They didn't really do that. Like, you know how they did a great job on you know, Shadows of the Colossus and what was the other one that they did? It was Shadows of Colossus, and what was the other game that those guys made again that everyone loved?
Oh, Eco.
Eco. You know how that looked gorgeous? It looked great in HD?
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine the complete opposite, and that's what they did for Silent Hill 2.
Oh, so it was kind of like the... I'm trying to think how to say...
Like, they didn't even get the effect right. Like, the fog looked horrible. Like, apparently...
It was basically the Marvel vs. Capcom 2 kind of thing, where that one sprite... Like, who was... What character was that?
Oh,
where
you're
was,
talking like, about
one
Morgan.
Was easily ripped off.
Morgan, who was essentially Capcom SNK2. Morgan was the copied one from...
Yeah,
from
that
Dark
was like
Stalker
a copy paste job. All the other ones, they tried to like, you know, enhance them, make them look nicer, and that was just like shit. Phone it in, man.
I learned later on it's because they had already made those sprites and they just hadn't made that one. Like, they had made those in other versions of the game and they're just kind of copied.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, the reason why that's the case is that whereas Shadows of Colossus and Ico were actually reverse engineered from the PS2 games. And essentially for Silent Hill 2, they got like an early version of the code and they built from that. And this code wasn't even the final version that was put on disk. So it suffers from a lot of the bugs that were in an early version that were fixed when they, you know, published it. So it's interesting. Again, there's actually a really good article online from the guys that made Shadows of the Colossus, the HD version, I think. I remember reading it somewhere. I forgot where it was. Talking about their process and how they did what they did in terms of making a thing. Because basically Shadows of the Colossus came out so well and Silent Hill 2, came, you know, the HD version came out so poorly. People were like, well, did you not put any time in this? And so the guys from Shadows explained what they did and how they did it and why their turned out the way it did. And it was crazy things like reverse engineering CPU calls, understanding the quirks of the system, putting those in. Like, they went all out, and it was really kind of cool hearing them, you know, hearing their development process go into it because of what they're doing. Because the idea isn't so much of, well, let's just up-res the textures. It's like, no, we got to essentially port this code over, and we don't really have any, like, and they even admitted the code that they would have gotten would have been older code, because a lot of that stuff just isn't saved. A lot of stuff just isn't around anymore in terms of build data and things like that. So it was sort of interesting reading their article, how they did it, and how Silent Hill 2 just didn't do it. But regardless of the fact, I've been wanting to play some horror games recently. Like, I kind of want to play Silent Hill 2. I think I might start up Lone Survivor again. It's an indie kind of game, survival horror game. And I really, really want to play the new Amnesia. I've heard some good things about that. There's a couple of horror games I just want to play and kind of have yet to play.
Man, you're wanting to do that. One of the things that I did in preparation is, man, I love to try to have Halloween influence the crap that I'm doing. You know, I'm trying to write, you know, horror stories and stuff.
Right.
I'm reading a collection of Robert E. Howard's just pure horror stories. And I gotta tell you, those are enjoyable, but man, it's a different world he was writing in, man. Like, now it's one of those things where more often than not, you got to say with Robert E. Howard, like, nah, he's good, but he's kind of a racist, but, you know, he's all right. No, I can't even tell you how there was
a... What do you mean by kind of a racist? How can you be kind of a racist?
Okay, well, kind of a racist, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt of the time in which he was writing that, you know, the word Negro was not as, whoa, you're not, don't use crap like that. You know what I mean? That one... okay, but yeah, he said some shit in some stories that you're like, man, that's how do you want me to take that, sir? Like, no, there was one story I was reading. It was called The Shadow of the Beast, and all of these collections, it's awesome that they came out with them. I want to say it's Tor Books or something like that that came out with them, but they added little illustrations, you know, to some of the stories and stuff like that. And this one, the illustration was like a kind of scarred over like ape that's been chained to a wall and he's trying to get out or something. I was like, okay, you know, there's going to be a weird ape in the story. All right. And then the story proceeds to talk about how this black guy shot some, you know, white farmer or something like that, like threatened his sister and ran off to the forest. And the entire time I'm reading, I'm like, holy shit, if this is the villain, then what's with that ape? Oh my God. Like, I was waiting for it to stop being racist as shit. And then at the very end, it's like, oh, it turns out it was the ghost of a gorilla that had escaped or something like that. I was like, thank flipping God that he went with, like, terrible ending, because otherwise, like, you would just have to mark that one as, like, oh, racist as shit. like, wow, that's racist.
It's been such a while since I've read anything horror-related. And only because there hasn't been anything that's... Like,
it kind of strikes your interest.
Well, it's been the last time I even watched anything, like... I'm trying to think the last horror film I watched.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
No. The Conjuring.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The Conjuring.
Which one was The Conjuring? I could swear I saw
that one. That was the new one that came out.
Oh, the one about, like, they were ghost hunters or something, yeah, like, yeah. The 70s. Yeah, okay.
That was actually pretty good. That wasn't as bad as I thought.
I was actually pretty surprised. I was going in there thinking I was going to come out pretty disappointed. But, you know, I was the way that they did the stuff that they did in that film, I was actually pretty impressed by it. But
I was about to say, I love the fact that they went with practical effects when they could. Which is really
that's
cool.
That's one thing that kills me, and that's one that I keep on noticing when I'm watching these older and older flicks, you know, that one of the ones we've got on the list is like The Howling, and I've said it for years. That's in that movie, you've got one of the best werewolf transformations, no CG, just some guy, some creature creator having to do that.
Well,
I don't know.
I think American Werewolf in Paris is pretty damn good. Or London,
but man,
London.
That was a bunch of. Well, yeah, the one in London, or
because what?
Yeah, London.
Yeah,
the first
London.
One, yeah,
the
that
first
one was. I'll give you that one because, again, man, you had a creature creator. You had a guy that had to map out how the hell do I make this transformation look realistic? And I mean, more often than not, in a werewolf flick, that's a huge chunk of it.
Oh yeah.
You know, but with CG now, I mean, I think of something like. I mean, albeit it's a terrible film, like the Underworld movies. I remember the first one, all
first
of the transformations were like in the shadow, like you saw the shadows changing. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you had all this budget for funny contact lenses and fake teeth, but you couldn't do one werewolf transformation like right.
My favorite thing in all of the Underworld films is the bullets. That may be my favorite thing.
Oh, the sunlight bullets?
That is my favorite concept ever invented in anything. Is solar bullets.
Just for one, why would you need them in the... Because they say it's like the military was developing this stuff. Why would they need sunshine bullets?
I don't know. Apparently,
like, they already have tracer rounds if you want to make that argument. What the hell do you need a UV bullet for?
I was more impressed, like, why... Because I can't remember who had the UV bullets. It couldn't have been the vampires, obviously. It had to be the vampire hunters.
Yeah, it was like the werewolves or had them or something like that because, you know, they had to even the odds, which is another thing that, again, I could not stand about those films. Like, oh, you've got werewolves that are, in essence, you know, physically stronger and more powerful than their enemy, but they're going to stay in human form and shoot at them with shotguns.
It was so, like, bizarre. You know, even though it didn't get, it got kind of a bad rap. You know, you should try to watch during your Halloween stuff is Daybreakers, the Willem Dafoe one with the like vampires, things like that.
Oh yeah,
I dug it. I dug it on a thematic level more so than I dug in a story level. I just love the world that they kind of created. The sort of
You were telling me about that where you really had to figure how would society work if, you know, the majority of people were vampires.
Yeah, it was really cool how they did it. Like, I thought they did as good a job as they could with, you know, I think they had a pretty low budget.
I don't know. One of my big problems with any vampire movie is that I've always thought vampires are kind of lame.
Well, like, at least, yeah, and they kind of go into that. Like, because it's, what I dug about Daybreakers, it was, again, just the world it created. If it had been nothing, if that world had been sort of, like, if it had been very, you know, if it had been like another kind of, you know, Dracula 2000 or some bullshit like that, I would have, you know, been kind of angry.
When was the
it.
Last time you saw any of that movie, man?
Oh, I don't even remember. It's been such a long time.
I don't know where, if it was on Netflix or something, I caught like an additional, like, I caught like the first 15 minutes of it or something like that. I remember seeing it back in the day. One of those, it's funny to see where people start off Because the Dracula in that, you know, King Leonidas is that Gerard Butler
guy.
Yeah,
that's right. I forgot Gerard Butler.
Sporting some straight up, like, Carrie-style volume of hair. Like, it's,
that's
like,
right.
Shit ridiculous. But, God, man. Well, ridiculous vampire movies. The saxophone player from The Lost Boys. You got to wonder about Joel Schumacher. He had the final say on that.
I will say this about Dracula 2000. I always liked the concept of it, that Dracula was born out of, you know, that the reason why he didn't
like silver. It was like the whole Judas Iscariot mythology.
Yeah, I always kind of liked that. Like, I liked the concept because it made silver mean something, at least. And why silver?
Yeah, because it was one of those, like, eh, it works on werewolves, you might as well throw it on with the vampires. Like,
right, but I liked at least how they worked. They tried their best to make a mythos with it. I don't know if it was effective or not, but I dug it. I thought that was kind of cool. Like, oh, that's why Silver kills him, is because, you know.
Oh, and the sunlight. And, you know, yeah, they tried to give that, you know, kind of rinky-dink explanation to it.
I didn't say it was a good one. I liked that they were trying to, because that movie was a piece of shit. That was a horrible piece of shit.
Yeah, it was, I mean, if you add the year to, because it came out in 2000, if you add the year that you're, you know, because it's the millennium, yeah, your movie's going to suck.
All right, which Dracula was more of a pussy? Dracula 2000 or Blade 3's Dracula?
Oh, Dracula 2000, easy. Even though please don't think that's, you know.
That's what I'm saying, which was more of a pussy. That's why I was hoping there'd be
The other one, you want me to rate him on acting? Like, Jesus, because the one in Blade 3, like, I know that guy's done other work, you know, since then. But yeah, it was, I don't know if it was the writing, I don't know if it was the directing, or if it was just legit, you know, that guy can't act. But man, that was Blade, you know, Trinity. The dialogue was wooden, and it was just terrible.
All right, let's see.
But then
again,
Blade movies, how good are they really going to be?
Let's see if we can find. I don't even know who Dracula was. It's not even giving me.
Man, I swear it was the guy from like Prison Break or something.
Oh, is he actually cast as Dracula, or is he cast as something else that I just don't know it?
Oh, they just give him a generic name, like he's not Dracula, but yeah, he's Dracula.
Well, because I don't know, because I'm seeing, like, I'm not seeing Dracula here. I'm seeing, like, because I'm trying to find, because I've yet to see. I've only heard bits and pieces from this damn film. I've never actually seen Blade 3, and I think that's for the best. But I've always heard that Dracula was a complete and utter bitch in that film. And I'm trying to find who it could be.
It was one of those things where, like, if you were, you know, you wake up after 1,000 years, you're not immediately going to put on a tank top and, like, you know, show the guns off walking down, you know, Main Street.
All right, it had to be Dominic Purcell then. That had to have been who it was, because he's the only one that was in Prison Break. He was also in Equilibrium and apparently in Mission Impossible 2, because everyone's in there.
Man, those Mission Impossible movies couldn't even, after the first one, didn't even bother with any of the other ones.
But regards to the fact, I think this Halloween, if I'm going to see anything, there's a couple of quote-alongs at the draft house that I want to go to. One of them, I think it's Ghostbusters.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes, I will watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I do have it on a visual medium, and I don't remember if it's on DVD or Blu-ray, to be honest. I can't remember if you bought me after all. I will watch it. I will put it on. You know what? I'll try to watch it tomorrow. How about that? I will
man,
do my best
to
watch it.
You will not. Well, I don't know. Maybe you will, but it's an experience.
I think it's that I'm scared to put it on now because it's such a. It's one of those movies that everybody talks about in very reverent tones that I'm afraid that if I watch it and I
then
only
it's just not gonna live up to it.
And
no, I hear you.
You know, and if only I kind of like it, like I'll be fine, but I'm afraid of like, yeah, it was okay. And then I'm gonna have like, it was okay. But how it's the fucking, it's Texas Chainsaw Horror, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's what set up this whole shit in motion.
No, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, I mean, admittedly, there's chunks of it that, yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of story to it. It is a, how do you get a group of teenagers into a weird place and have them chased around and murdered? You know, that's it's a generic slasher flick. But for, I mean, the little budget that they had for, you know, what they were working with, they made a hell of a horror movie, man. It's kind of like where... I mean, you've seen the original Evil Dead, you know.
Right, yeah.
It's like where you could see that, oh, if they had more of a budget, if they had more to work with, they could have done more here and here and stuff like that. You see that in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But if I had to rate horror flicks, you know, pound for pound, comparing those two, Texas Chainsaw Massacre takes it every time. Like, it is a disturbing little film. Like, it's going to make you uneasy. And, yeah, you know, it was worked with a small budget, you know, a bunch of unknowns. And if you ever get a chance, man, after you see that movie, watch the – there's an interesting documentary on how it was made. And, man, Tobe Hooper, the guy that directed that whole thing, he sounds like he's worse than Stanley Kubrick to work with. Like, he sounded like a horrible – oh, you're an actor. You are my little pawn in this, you know, grand scheme of what I'm doing. Like, so just shut up and do it.
I will make it at least an effort. And by effort, I mean, I will sit down and watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre sometime this October. I will do that. Mario, we are completely out of time. Once again, we have hit the hour mark here.
I hope I'm seeing that.
Dude, thank you so much for being on the show. I didn't get a chance to ask you.
Anytime, man.
I didn't get a chance to ask you what you've been writing, what you've been working on. Well, tell people online what you've been working on, what's new in the life of Mario when it comes to the writing side of things.
Well, you know, a lot of what I'm doing as far as publishing and what everyone, you know, on the web and the world gets to see, not a whole lot's been happening. A couple of websites have been picking up stories of mine. One was Murmurations Magazine. They picked up a story called Gentleman's Two-Step. There's one place that's actually been picking up a few. It's Collective Exile. They picked up an interesting little story. I think I told you about that one, Jesus of Green Grit County, where a guy comes back from the dead and everybody thinks he's Jesus. Another one they picked was The Hungry Man Sees Far, where that one, it's got one of my favorite rejection letters ever attached to it, because it was very positive, but just there was a statement in there that was amazing. It was, we would have taken this story, but the scene where the microwave is sexually violated was a little too much. I was like, that's an amazing, that should be, you know, a little snippet on the back of one of my books. Like, that's an amazing thing to say.
We would have taken it, but.
And that website.
We draw the line at rape and microwaves.
Yeah, and it was artistically done. But so, yeah, there have been some places that have been picking up some fiction and things like that. You know, San Casimiro, Texas, the collection of horror stories is still, you know, for sale, as well as the sword and sorcery novel Twin Burials, that's out there. But just on, you know, personal writings and stuff like that, I just finished writing a couple of novellas that I've been putting a piece of each one on my website each week. It's the Loggerhead Murders and the Dwarf and the Meteorite, which in fact does not have a dwarf in it.
Well, good to hear that at least you're some people are picking up the writings and looking to it.
Yeah,
where can people find you online if they want to just ping you for some stuff and ask you maybe your thoughts?
If you wanted to you know, look up any of my work, you can find it at marioemartinez.com, all one word. I update that site a couple of times a week. You can find me on Twitter as God, what is that? I'm hardly ever on Twitter other than to put that on the site. Is it Mario Martinez 39?
I think so. I'll tell you right now. You are, yep, 39. So, you're the 39th Mario Martinez.
And if not, you can like me on Facebook. I've got a Mario E. Martinez fan page on there. Again, that's, you know, to get updates on stuff I'm doing to the site. Anything, you know, if something gets picked up for, you know, publication, you'll find out about it. Oh, and that just reminded me, actually, a horror story of mine just got picked up for an anthology out of the Valley here in Texas.
Oh, nice. So,
more news on when that comes out.
I'll have to get you back on when it comes time for that to be out in the world.
Yeah,
so
whatever,
we can,
man.
Totally. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. If you want to comment on this whole episode, talk about a horror movie you like, or how the fact that you enjoyed Silent Hill, or, you know what, I'm getting kind of so tired of those games. I want you know, good old-fashioned other type of games or whatever. Ping me, like I said, Twitter. I'm at Vincent404 there. Of course, if you want to comment on this exact episode, go to our website. It's cosmere.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, previous episodes, all the social pages, and of course, other shows on this whole network of mine, including my other show, Jump Point, where I talk about the gamut of gaming topics with Bryce Castillo. So that's the show for today. So tune next week when I talk to the geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Thanks for listening.